This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Rusty Jacobs. It's been a busy week on Jones Street. Republican lawmakers overrode several gubernatorial vetoes and pushed forward a slate of constitutional amendments. Joining me for a look back at the week in state politics is Becky Gray, Senior Vice President of the conservative John Locke Foundation, and Rob Schofield, Executive Director of the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hey, Rusty.
So, Becky, let's start with the proposed amendment to cap North Carolina's personal income tax. Is it a key to fiscal responsibility or an impediment to raising revenue for critical needs?
Well, of course, that's the question that's being debated. In my view, keeping all of the tax rates as low as we possibly can to lower that burden on North Carolina citizens, allow them to keep more of their money, is a fiscal responsibility. And we've also seen the payoffs with this over the last several years with the transformational tax reforms that we've seen. Right now, North Carolina's personal income is capped at 10%. So this isn't something new to our Constitution.
It would
be a change that we would lower that to 5.5% under the budget that just passed. Our personal income tax rate is now 5.25%. So this cap would be under where we are now. There's a lot of debate about this discussion. I think it's something we need to really pay attention to so that in November, when we are have the opportunity to vote for this, that we can make that decision.
Well, one point brought up by skeptics, if not opponents, of this measure is that curbing the state's ability to raise revenue in hard economic times could affect the AAA bond rating, that the obligations might not be met in a crunch.
Right, and the state treasurer's office was actually asked to speak on that directly. The state treasurer didn't seem to feel like that was a big threat because we have a menu of taxes, as many states do. We have a menu of taxes, so the personal income is not the only revenue source that we have. We also have a statewide sales tax. We have a corporate tax. There are property taxes that are now done through the local governments, through counties. So there are other options if there were a problem.
I don't think there's any doubt that this is effectively a tax shift. It's part of really the great tax shift that's been going on in North Carolina for a long time, where we're shifting the responsibility for funding government from the wealthy to people in the middle and the bottom. There's no doubt that there will come a time when we will need revenue, and this will require doing away with exemptions that benefit people, maybe the mortgage, you know, these kinds of exemptions people get on their taxes, doing away with, or indeed raising the sales tax, raising fees and costs for getting various government services. But I mean, here's the central point to keep in mind. Right now, North Carolina has hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of need in public education alone, that we're underfunding public education. This basically locks in the framework that we have right now. It's an arbitrary number. There's no particular reason to pick 5.5 or 5.7 or 6.8. And if the legislature wants to do this, as they've already done it, they've already cut this tax, why hamstring future legislatures that may be elected by a different group of people with a different set of priorities?
Well, let's talk about the proposed amendment to establish a merit selection process for filling judicial vacancies. A nonpartisan judicial merit commission would evaluate candidates nominated by voters. Those evaluations would go to the legislature, and lawmakers would send two recommendations to the governor from which the governor would choose an appointee. So, Rob, would that take the politics out of the judiciary as Republican backers of the bill claim?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any chance. This is clearly another attempt by the General Assembly. The General Assembly wanted to appoint all judges. They wanted to grab that power for themselves. They've been in this battle with Governor Cooper ever since Governor Cooper, even before he took office. They've been doing everything they can to take away powers that have traditionally been in the governor's office. This is just another attempt to do that. The issue of merit selection is certainly something that probably merits discussion. We probably ought to have a serious talk about it, but another last-minute, out-of-nowhere constitutional amendment doesn't seem to me like a wise way to approach this very important topic. And clearly, I think, ultimately, this is about the legislature taking power away from the governor.
Becky, is there merit to the merit selection process?
I think there's certainly merit to looking at
as
the merit selection
amendment.
Process. Yeah, and how we elect judges in North Carolina. I mean, this is something that we've been discussing for a number of years. As a matter of fact, the John Locke Foundation hosted a very high-level discussion of this with people in the academic world several months ago. It's been discussed at the General Assembly. I think it's important to recognize that this particular constitutional amendment has to do with judicial vacancies. You know, we still have elections for judges in North Carolina. So this would be when one of those duly elected judges by the people of North Carolina had to sidestep their responsibilities for whatever reason, and there is a vacancy for that seat, what this would do in my mind is it actually takes it out of the political process. The way it is now, the governor gets to appoint that person. I would think, and I think historically we've seen, that whoever the governor is, they tend to appoint someone from their political party. This would take it, I think this makes it less political, and also does not circumvent the will of the voters who originally seated that judge in that seat.
Amid the avalanche of proposed constitutional amendments, one that is guaranteed to raise the ire of at least some people and maybe excite other potential voters, the photo ID for voters being a constitutional amendment. Becky, does that amendment address a real problem with the integrity of elections in North Carolina?
Well, there's some that argue that it does, and there are some that argue that it disenfranchises voters. In my view, looking at the research and studies and things that have been done in other states, I think probably the claim that voters are disenfranchised is overblown. The fact that, or the claim that people are voting fraudulently because they don't have a voter ID, I think that's overblown. 33 states have something in their laws that require some kind of identification when they vote. So North Carolina clearly is an outlier in this. It's getting a lot of debate. We've seen it go through committee this week. It's moving its way. Another thing significant, I think, about this voter ID is very rarely do you see the Speaker of the House sponsoring a bill. Speaker Tim Moore has sponsored two bills during this two-year biennium. The first one was to celebrate the Carolina basketball national championship. He's a big Carolina fan. The other one is this voter ID bill. You also saw him present this bill in committee this week.
So, Rob, you have Speaker Moore and the Republicans really, nothing if not determined, to get something on voter ID passed.
You know, there's so many issues with this proposal that deserve to be highlighted. And again, because we're rushing it through at the end of the session, it's going to lead inevitably, I think, to court challenges. There are huge vagueness issues with respect to the language of the amendment. And then, of course, when you talk about election integrity, the real issue has to do with hacking of computers and meddling in our elections by, more recently, foreign powers. This does nothing to address that. This is one-by-one sort of issue with perhaps a handful of voters it might dissuade from casting an unlawful ballot. But we know that there are thousands upon thousands of people who don't have photo ID, lack the means to get it. There are workarounds in the TSA system and all the other systems of tech that we have these days for security. There ought to, at a minimum, be some workarounds built into this system. And I fear very much that this language is vague. It's going to be in the courts for years to come.
More on constitutional amendments and vetoes to come, I'm sure. So until then, Becky Gray, Senior Vice President of the Conservative John Locke Foundation, and Rob Schofield, Executive Director of the Progressive NC Policy Watch. Thank you both. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Happy
Rusty.
Summer.